You know what? For, yes.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, you could still... That's.
I would like to see them live once in my life.
Right. Is Terminal 5 a good venue?
It's not my favorite, but it is sizable, and, like, the sound is decent.
Mm.
That's where I saw John Carpenter play.
Oh, okay, yeah. Like, I've heard of it, but...
Yeah, it's sort of like the good mid-range venue in Manhattan. Like, if you want to sell, like, 1,000 tickets, but that's it.
Like, for good bands, but not, like, arena shows.
Yeah. Not the people who would be playing at fucking Barclays Center or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if Wu-Tang is still just, like, everyone shouting all the lyrics at once while throwing tiny towels around each other's necks and all that sort of stuff. I watched them... Did they play Coachella one year?
Probably.
I watched a live stream of them performing, and it seemed somewhat tighter than what I'd heard of their live show.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I it could be, you know, especially this late in their careers, maybe it'll be a mess, but I would like to see that mess once.
Yeah. I would think it would be less of a mess.
Mm.
They got some years under their belts. They know how to perform those songs.
They do. They also don't perform together that often.
It's true. Yeah.
You know, but sometimes that doesn't really matter. You know, like I saw the Tribe Called Quest reunion when that happened.
Oh yeah.
And that they were fucking incredible. Mm. You know, they apart from the part where it seemed like no one wanted to stand next to Q-Tip. you know, he had his own little corner on the stage, and that was that.
Yeah.
But they were really good, and they didn't miss any beats on that thing, so...
I think it's the thing, like, it is easier as a rap act to get your shit down if it's, like, two MCs.
Yes.
Three MCs, you know?
When you're talking about nine MCs, like it's a little bit more of a thing.
And all of them have microphones. It's a lot easier for just, like, you're holding the microphone, I'm gonna yell along with this part of the song, because I feel it, but then every other guy on stage feels that way about a different part of the song.
Right.
And everyone's just yelling. Unless you, like, fucking rehearse it and go, like, okay, here's what we're going to do. You all say it here.
Right. At the same time...
You say black acts.
At the same time, you have to imagine they probably turn You God's mic real far down.
Oh, you know.
Maybe even Capadonna's.
Maybe they're the tightest live performers of the group at this point. Who could say?
They're probably the ones that are willing to put in the most effort.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they're just going to play fucking 36 Chambers, then I can't be, like...
Right, yeah, that's, you know...
That sounds incredible.
Yeah.
Also, that album's 25 years old. God
yep.
damn.
Yeah.
God damn.
Uh-huh.
We're now getting into that range of music where... I was at that age where I started consuming music with a much greater frequency and greater variety... So right, now I'm yeah. hitting that point with a lot of stuff. It's like, oh god, that album is fucking... That album is a quarter century old.
Right. Yep.
Over and over again.
For me, it's the weird math thing of like, oh, the music I thought was corny when I was a kid, that was further distance away than the music I now like from when I was a kid.
Right.
Of like, oh, all that, you know, 70s shit that was just like, whatever. That I've grown to appreciate more and more of over the years, I guess, too. But
yeah.
The stuff I was like, man, fuck this shit. When I was, you know, 15 to 19... Now that's, yeah.
It's so distant.
You go like, oh, man, the Straight Outta Compton is now like a Beatles album was to, the, like, if you were a 15-year-old kid today.
Right.
But Straight Outta Compton, far more important than anything the Beatles ever.
I can see that perspective.
Yeah, maybe not. I don't know if I want to actually sign up for that one.
Yeah. No. It's yours now. You own that.
Okay. Yeah, I'll take it.
money spent, niggas getting bent, chicks in front of me, just the way I like it. Money's turning something. I got a seat up in the cut and I'm running something.
My wife is a big Beatles fan, which is fun because she is younger than I am, and also I get to say things like, you know, when Paul's Boutique came out, you know, my Beatles and stuff like that. That's really dumb. Just like, just say it to make her angry.
That's fair. Yeah, like the Beatles thing, you know, for someone who worked on a game that fucking did nothing but celebrate their legacy extremely detailed ways. I like the music, and I agree with the importance, but also I do not have that reverence for it. Working on that game made me appreciate them more.
Playing that game made me understand why people like the Beatles.
Yeah. But also, you know, people who are insane about the Beatles, I can't relate. I can't do it. They are a great pop band that revolutionized a lot of things, but also the way their legacy is sometimes treated as this incredible sacrosanct thing is, like, maybe a little overbearing.
Yeah, I would not even sign my wife up to being crazy.
Yeah.
On that end of things. Yeah, no, it was specifically playing Beatles Rock Band that got me to really respect the musicianship, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, going through and playing a lot of those parts. I'm just like, oh, this bass part here is really fucking cool. Like, oh, the drums are actually really neat here in this part. And
even with, like, the abstracted gameplay, just the way that the game sort of, like, by nature remixes that stuff remasters it in with different emphasis. Kind of, yeah, like, it gives you some new perspective on that stuff.
Yeah.
It also makes it really easy to get vocal tracks onto YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah, that knock-on effect of, like, what Rock Band's file structure and file security did for mashups. Is pretty fun.
I'm pretty sure Neil Cicierega owes a great deal of his catalog to those tracks being available.
I think he's said.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's said as much. There's a decent open. I don't know if it's open source, but it's a freely downloadable Guitar Hero clone that people have adapted all of those files to run in it.
Mm-hmm. Is that Clone Hero?
I think it is Clone Hero.
Yeah.
You mentioned it, yes. I don't know if it does drums. I think it might just do guitar now. We were planning on trying to do drums and everything else.
There is some kind of hacked version. So, like, Rock Band Customs exist. Like, there is a PC thing that I think runs on modded 360s where you can get tracks downloaded.
If you have a modded 360, I think, you can take the... Like, you can replicate the Rock Band file structure with whatever you have. And
even though you can't really mute the individual, stems the way you would with an official track, like, you can
still
chart it and it will work.
Yeah. I've never seen a modded 360 in person. It's, like, some of that stuff seems fascinating and weird. But I've just never seen one.
I never bothered modding one because I had a debug.
Yeah.
I just had.
Yeah. But I don't know, like, running retail signed executables on a debug might be hard.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, I don't know that. Like, I know that I could... One thing you could do with that is that if you had the right code, you could access the full music stores.
Right.
For free, if you wanted to do that. But also you had to have, like, a functional build of the game.
Right.
And
yeah, that was the thing that was not necessarily out there.
My favorite shit was always the tracks, and they had to do this with a lot of the Beatles stuff, was the tracks that just, like, there was no separate stem for.
Yeah.
Like, it was all live recorded, or, like, whatever mix they had. The only track, for, like, the one I always think of is Green Day on Dookie. The track, whatever the track is before Longview that goes into Longview.
Oh, right, yeah.
Whatever
yeah.
they... Whatever they sent over, there was no split version of that.
Yeah.
So they had to find a way to separate those tracks and remix it in such a way that the, like, essentially they were like, whatever software they were using, they were having to, like, isolate tracks from the overall mix.
Yeah.
Without the actual stems to separate.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, if you miss a note in those songs, it becomes very clear what they are muting. Because the whole mix gets real weird.
Yeah.
But if right. you're not missing stuff, you never notice.
Yeah.
And a lot of the Beatles stuff was that way, too, where, like, the mix would get a little funky in some places if it was a song that just straight up did not have a separate, like, track mix.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that stuff's interesting.
They got real wild with it in the audio department. Like, they had to do some real weird problem solving with that yeah. stuff.
It was a different time.
Mm-hmm.
Rock Band Japan. Pearl Jam.
That beautiful era where they had not yet learned that maybe you shouldn't announce things you haven't started on yet.
Eh, you know. Works for Bethesda.
Yeah. No, they actually put out the things they haven't started on yet.
Oh, well, yeah, I guess they have it both ways.
It's like that and the... That first Who album they announced, which they found out immediately after announcing that, oh, we straight up don't have the masters for half these songs.
Cool.
So they reworked it as, here's a greatest hits pack of what we do have.
Yeah.
Which was a great pack, but also
yeah, yeah, but
was
like,
not the album they had initially announced.
It's complicated shit.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that reminds me of all the stories you heard about Sega starting up the Make Your Own Music Video project.
Right.
That the initial idea for that was like, oh man, it's going to be awesome because we're going to get all this cutting room floor stuff and all the behind the scenes footage from the video shoots, and you're going to be able to select it all and make your own version of the music video. And then they got into it and realized like, oh, all these shoots are super efficient and there is no leftover footage.
Yeah.
And also, they don't save any of that shit. So... let's go get some public domain cartoons
mm-hmm.
and pictures of money being folded or whatever the fuck else. Other, they just like went and got some fucking stock library shit and used that for the other two tracks and the other two video tracks in that game because they just
yeah.
had nothing else to fucking work with. But they didn't find out until they were so far into it that they were like, well, guess we'll just keep doing this, I guess. Fuck.
I had not realized... until recently how bad archiving was in the pre-DVD era.
Yeah.
Like, film shoots were not designed for keeping the shit that you were not putting in the final product.
Yep.
I think, what was it, like... The story I was reading was an interview with Paul W.S. Anderson about Event Horizon and how there was originally that cut of the movie that was like 2 hours, like it had like an extra half hour of footage, and it was the one that audiences fucking hated because it was so gory and fucked up.
Yeah, yeah.
Like much longer versions of the fucked up parts of that mm-hmm. movie. And so when the DVD came around a couple of years later, because that was like kind of early DVD stuff.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, well, we're doing these things with like, you know, director's cuts and deleted scenes. Do you have yeah. anything? And they just didn't have it. Like the footage was just like gone.
Yeah.
And... I guess they found some of it in an abandoned salt mine that some studio had leased to store old reels. Because
yeah, right,
I guess like something about the environment in those places.
The right kind of like
yeah.
dry and dark.
Yeah. And so like it wasn't everything, but like they found a little bit of not great quality footage that I think they at some point thought about putting out there on some
yeah,
later release.
Like restoring
but,
for something.
Yeah. Like But yeah, like a lot of those movies just don't have that shit because nobody thought to store it.
Yeah. That's the thing I think a lot of companies are running into now with like source code for old games.
Mm-hmm.
Like how low is auctioning off the source code to Leisure Suit Larry 1 and 2.
I saw that.
It's like a bummer that it's just getting fucking sold off to the, separately to the highest bidder and not like, hey, let's keep this collection together and it's got historical significance. And,
yeah.
And let's get it somewhere where it can be preserved and not in the hands of some private collector that's just going to fucking ghost it.
Yeah, I mean, I know, like, you know, the Cifaldis of the world and the Steve Lins of the world are out there, like, you know, kind of trying to...
Doing what they can.
Doing what they can with what they can get their hands on, but...
They can't buy everything.
God, who was... I forget. Maybe I was talking to you, but someone was saying that, like... There was some game that I think they were someone wanted to remaster, and they just straight up could not find the source code for it anymore.
Yeah, that happens all the time.
Yeah, like, they thought they had it, and then it turned out that whatever they thought they had was not that source code, and no one knows where it is.
Damn.
And I imagine that is an incredibly common occurrence now. Like, as studios go out of business, as, you know, stuff kind of gets auctioned off, like, no one knows where a lot of those files and a lot of that archival material even is anymore.
So I guess, like, even, like, in the early days, that stuff was disposed of almost immediately. Like, it was that SNK collection that just came out.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bit of museum stuff in there. About Akari Warriors, and they talk about making the home version of Akari Warriors, and they're like, yeah, well, you know, the people making the Famicom version of the game didn't have access to any of the code or anything from the original game or sprites, so they had to basically play the arcade version and fucking take photos of all of it and recreate it bit by bit. And I was like, what the fuck? But yeah, I remember hearing stories about, it might have been a Mega Man game, but I don't remember. It was definitely Capcom. It was like Capcom was looking to put some old games back out there. Whether it was like Virtual Console or, mm-hmm. or whatever, well, it would have been Virtual Console, but it was like they were looking for the source code for one of their games for a re-release of it in some way, and all they could find was printouts, and so they had to OCR scan in all of that source code to get it all back, and it was like lucky that they even fucking had that.
Right. Because at least that's something
right.
you can build around. A couple people in the chat are saying it was Panzer Dragoon Saga. I don't remember if that was the game I was thinking of, but I have heard that story about them not having the code for that.
Yeah, it's, you know. With something like Panzer Saga, it'd be easier to just, like, write a re-implementation of the engine.
Because mm-hmm.
at least you can get your hands on maybe some of the file, like the... Like
some of the assets.
The data, the assets and stuff off of the game discs. Or and then remaster those separately, you know, kind of start by re-implementing the existing assets into a new engine and then go from there. It'd be fucking rough.
The lesson I've learned from all of this is that the creators are never the people you want to rely on for archiving and for preservation.
Well, it's, you know, but also the thing is that the companies have no monetary reason to preserve their shit.
Well, they do now.
Like,
their understanding is there now.
Yeah,
but like, for, you know, and video game companies in the 80s and probably in the 90s weren't thinking like, oh, we're going to, you know, find a way to re-release this in 20 years. Exactly. Like, they're not that forward thinking.
No, definitely not. And yeah, much better, like, source control and all these other things exist now. But...
Icewind Dale, that was the one. That was the one I was thinking of.
Yeah. And then, like, if you want any kind of archival material of in, like, you know, something that would be in the vein of, like, deleted scenes or, like, work...
It kind of is. Yeah. Like, they start with the what they built for last year. They figure out what they need to rip out and what they want to build on. And they start doing that and seeing what breaks.
Yeah. Does anyone, or did anyone, work a year ahead, like, hey, before this year's game, like, we're 3 months out from ship on this year's game, but we've got, like, a team already working on next year's stuff a little bit.
Like, people on the design side and the production side, like, there were definitely people that were, like, whiteboarding.
Yeah,
and,
like, here's the stuff we didn't get to that we think we can pull off this year, or here's, like, the major feature we want to tackle this time out.
Yeah, that was the pre-production process, and that was usually, like you said, a couple to 3 months, like, before a game came out, like, you would start seeing them starting to sketch stuff out. It would never really start coalescing until after the game came out. You know, like, they obviously didn't have, like, people to pull onto that stuff until it went gold.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, they were storyboarding ideas, like, you know, 2 or 3 years ahead of time sometimes, depending on, like, what they thought they could get done in a year or what would take longer.
It just sounds fucking rough.
Yeah, it's, I think,
never ending.
Yeah, to work on a game like that, I think you have to love it more than anything else in the world.
Yeah.
You know, like, you have to want to dig into that minutia every fucking day and know that you're going to repeat this cycle over and over
again.
And
just be able to fucking handle the triage nature of it, of, like,
yeah,
you know, you've got, like, 9 features you really care about, but you're like, well, a year is a year. We can't invent more time, so I guess we got to take these 6 features and not even think about them for 12 months.
Right.
And then maybe in 9 months we'll look at them and go, actually, these don't make sense anymore. Cut those. We're doing this other stuff, you know. And
yeah. And, you know, as technology changes, like, you end up having to kind of kill your foundation, you know. Like, as new engines get introduced and, you know, new console technology, like, that foundation is never going to be there forever. It's going to be there for as long as you can squeeze what you can out of it. And then at a certain point, you have to be willing to knock it all down and start over again.
Right.
You know, part of the problem, I think, with Madden is that it feels like they haven't really done that in a long time.
Well, now that EA is all on Frostbite, like, they don't do it, right? I mean...
Well, there's that, but also
Frostbite will keep it advancing, and they're like, okay, well, we've overhauled a renderer here and there, and this is what, you know, now all the games can benefit from this. So you've got, like, a tech team working on new engine tools all the time, and I'm sure they're taking requests from all the different dev teams, like, hey, it would be really cool if we had this for Madden, or whatever. But then on top of that, like, yeah, you know, like Frostbite is probably just something that gets eternally updated, and when new console tech comes along, they're like, okay, well, now we can push these sliders, or it's more complicated than that, but, like,
yeah,
hey, we can, these are the sorts of things we can start doing now, like, you know, with Battlefield doing ray tracing this year, like, obviously they probably had to redo a lot of shit, and now they're like, okay, well, but ideally that's stuff that, you know, we can eventually implement across more games more easily because we've done this work at an engine level. Well, who knows if they did it.
That's the thing, though, is that the other side of that is, like, especially in a case where you're trying to apply an engine that is maybe built for one thing but not another.
Well, yeah.
There's a lot of retrofitting that has to go on behind the scenes. And for Madden, it hasn't worked out very well. Like, that game has gotten weirdly broken more so in the last couple of years than it was for a good stretch there. You know, like, Madden's never perfect, but there was a decent few years there where it felt like they were onto it. You know, like, they had kind of worked out the kinks, and they had gotten themselves on a nice path. And I kind of feel like the last two have been progressively worse, just because I don't know if it's just they haven't figured out how to get that engine working the way they want or what.
So could you pinpoint the year that it started to go off the rails with it moving to Frostbite, or do they have, like, good years Frostbite?
I forget what year they started with Frostbite. I'm going to double-check that. But I want to say last year was when I started noticing, and this year was, like, just weirdly janky in some pretty significant ways.
Do you think they're just, like, biting off more than they can chew on, like, new features and like, not implementing them as tightly as they need to?
I don't know. Madden 18 was the first one that used Frostbite.
Oh, really? Okay, so that is pretty fucking recent.
Yeah.
Shit. I thought that they were on it for a little while longer than that.
No, they had that Infinity engine they were using before that. Yes. And that started out a little rough, but they got it going. I think it's some of that, like, they're trying things. Like, they did that story mode last year that was good, but then they tried it again this year and it was terrible. You know, it feels like they didn't have enough time to actually build that out into something with just a year.
But is that something that you would pin on the tech? Because, like, a story mode just seems like, here's, you know, hey, at the end of the day, you're still playing the football.
No, but I would pin it on resources.
Okay.
I would pin it on them not having the resources to build a second one of those that was compelling.
Yeah. But is that, like, on the writing front, the storytelling front?
It's all of it. Like, it's the design front. Like, they literally made a less fun version of it. Like, they took out a lot of the player choice stuff. They focused on characters that were not as interesting.
Yeah, so maybe that's...
It's just messy.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know. It just feels like resource allocation and building everything around Frostbite has not benefited their sports series in a good way.
Yeah.
Like, NHL never gets resources, so that game's just been fucking treading water for, like, 4 years now.
Right.
NBA has gotten better, but they, like, it would be really hard for them not to, considering they started just at the bottom of the barrel. And now they have, like, a competent game, but not one that I would say necessarily plays better than the competition.
And 2K, like, NBA 2K, it seems like every year, like, the pocket of people that are pissed about how the online works.
And also the microtransactions.
Yeah, and that stuff. I feel like that gets louder every year.
Yes.
This year, it seems like, and I didn't play it at all, but, like, was the game also maybe rougher? Like, I feel like the complaints around this year's NBA 2K were, like, way, like, more varied and not just, hey, this microtransaction shit is fucked.
It's weird because I think some aspects of this year's game were considerably better than last year. Like, I think the story mode is a big difference. Like, the story they chose to tell was more interesting.
Did it have any ghosts in it?
No, but you do go to China for a while, which is cool.
Okay.
And it's very much, like, it's actually very focused on the D-League, which is something they haven't really done a lot with.
Yeah.
So that, I thought that was better. They dialed the microtransactions down a little, but not nearly enough.
Mm-hmm.
And their attempts at, like, doing GM mode as, like, a storytelling thing have not been good. Like, in any year they've tried to do it, it has not been good. I don't know. I think the louder nature this year was less that the game was worse, but, like, they didn't do enough to really address the complaints year to year.
So it's maybe just people are just getting tired of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sports are in a weird fucking place. Like, I realized as we were kind of going through stuff this year, like, I didn't put them in any of the real categories for talking about Game of the Year stuff.
Yeah.
And it's because I just don't feel any real specific way about any of them. You know, like, Madden kind of bummed me out because I was sort of hoping they would figure out some stuff from last year and make it better. They didn't. NBA 2K is just kind of, like I said, treading water, and so is NHL. They didn't even send us live, so I never got a chance to look at this year's.
So, right.
And I don't play FIFA, so I don't have any feelings about it. But, you know, like, these are games that I normally would care about, and I feel like the last couple of years I've barely been able to.
Sometimes it just feels like sports are in a weird place in the country.
They are.
Right now. I mean, more than just, like, the football stuff.
Like, leagues are expanding and trying different stuff. The NFL doesn't seem to know what the fuck they're doing for the most part, and they're just trying to, like, stop the bleeding, whatever they can, in terms of both audience and sort of perception of the league.
Yeah.
Baseball's baseball. You know?
Yeah, like, every offseason, like, I'm keenly interested when people start talking, you know? Because all the changes they end up, like, getting in that seem like they would get approved are things like, oh, you can only step out of the batter's box this many times. Do the, like, things that, like, potentially speed up the game, but not in a way that...
Not enough.
Yeah. Not in a way that makes, like, the actual game more exciting. It just means, like, oh, there's less time between pitches, and I guess that's good. But, like, there's still something about the core of baseball that's hard for me now. And I wonder if it's just, like, the pace of the world has just fucking accelerated so much that baseball is just not... Like, I just don't have the patience for it anymore.
Baseball feels like a legacy product to me.
Yeah.
It feels like a thing that exists specifically to remind people of a thing they once liked.
And, like, will it, you know, are kids getting into... Like, I'd ask that about all sports, with the possible exception of soccer.
Yeah.
Is, like, are kids playing fucking football anymore? Like, I know parents are, like, more skittish than ever about Pop Warner and just all, like... concussions, I mean, and all, like, hey, you know, maybe it's just not fucking worth it.
I mean, enough are that, like, you know, Pop Warner isn't suffering yet.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, like, high school football, especially in the regions where that is a very important thing, is still doing just fine. But I think, you know, like, sign-ups are lower, and, you know, there is definitely that vibe of, am I going to, like, in the future, essentially murder my child by putting them into the sport, is a question way more people are asking.
Right. And as they ask those questions, then it becomes even harder to, like, justify, like, the watching of football and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, it's probably more likely to get people to go, I just don't have a taste for it anymore.
Yeah. And the NFL just doesn't know how to thread the needle yet. You know, like, they're trying these rule changes that are supposed to make it safer, but they're also, like, some of them are so far-reaching and ill-defined that, like, normal-looking tackles end up getting flagged,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And it just it feels ridiculous. Like, there is a point where you just sort of have to acknowledge that this is not a safe sport and it never will be.
Yeah.
And no matter how many different fucking airbags you put in someone's helmet, there's still the opportunity for someone to get real fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the vast majority of players you ask would say, even knowing what they know, they will continue to play because it's what they know how to do and what they love.
Right.
But
it's lucrative.
But the important thing, I think, is more just that the knowledge is there and people can make the informed choice to say, I am willing to put myself through this or not.
Sure.
But the NFL, as a PR machine, they can't just settle on that because the discussion will inevitably get away from them and they have to look like they're being proactive about it no matter what.
It's a tough spot. I don't know what you do.
Yeah.
Other than, like, at some point, I think, like, you have to have the hard conversation of, like, should there be football?
Yeah. And if you're getting into that...
Because if you're making football safe, that is that football anymore, and is that even worth watching or playing or anything like that? And so, like, at that point, it really gets down to, like, should we even do this? And for the league, the answer is like, absolutely, of course, there's so much money. Yeah. It's like,
but if you start asking that question, you start saying, okay, well, should we be playing hockey? Should MMA exist?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, that's a harder question because there's enough contact sport out there.
Right.
And enough of it is lucrative that there's going to be a lot of pushback if you start asking those questions in a real way.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know. I guess, like, maybe I just view boxing and MMA differently because it is literally fucking combat sports.
Right.
Like, you know what you're getting into at that point, and it's...
I think NFL is a combat sport in everything but name.
Right, sure. Yeah, fight before it gets...
But look how often referees fuck up and don't stop a fight soon enough.
Sure.
Look how many times you see a dude just get fucking clobbered and not know where he is for days afterward. You know?
Sure.
Like, the injuries, I think, are no less severe by virtue of the structure of what they are doing.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you saw that fucking Tito Ortiz, Chuck Liddell thing, but that was one of the most brutal, sad things I have ever seen
in that sport. You're telling me that is that recent?
That just happened.
That sounds like the most ill-advised fucking thing in the world.
It was.
Like, those two guys getting into this again.
And it didn't last long. And the reason for it was because Tito Ortiz, despite being old, is just good enough to still hit those hits, whereas Chuck Liddell is extremely not. That dude looked lost from the second he walked in the octagon.
Yeah.
And the fucking... He looked like he couldn't defend himself.
Jeez.
And the fact that, like, MMA is still run outside of, like, but even the UFC, too, but especially the other leagues, it's, like, very much like a carny fucking production.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, fight regulations are not necessarily good enough to prevent shit like that from happening.
Yeah. Yeah, I hadn't heard of that. Fuck. That just...
Liddell should have never gotten in that ring.
No, man. Fucking Liddell was in those fucking Dreamcast games.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
And, like, you know, a few of his late career fights were still reasonably competitive, but the last time he had one of those was, like, Gordy, I'm reading the chat, 8 years ago.
Yeah, dude, fuck, that's... I mean, I guess you fucking pass the physical, and which they want you to pass because they know there's money in this fight. Yeah, man, fuck.
Yeah, it's not pro wrestling. Like, you can't just do that shit into your 50s as long as you stay in decent shape. My opinion ultimately comes down to, if you know what you are getting into, if you are informed about the real risks about what is taking place, and you still choose to do it, fucking Godspeed.
Hey, yeah, it's fucking free country.
Like, the thing with the NFL was always, like, they were not willing to pursue the CTE stuff, they were not willing to investigate it in a meaningful way, they were actively trying to shut down investigations into that stuff, and look where it got them. You know, and I think that had they been much more upfront about that stuff and been much more realistic about the way that stuff goes and what it was doing to their older players who were not as well protected, then not necessarily, I don't think that would help their perception problem, but I think it would have caused them way fewer headaches and made the league look a lot less fucking shady.
And they would have been a little further along now in terms of, like, okay, well, what do we do about this game? Like, what can we do?
Yeah. People die in auto racing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
People have been fucking career-ending, horrible injured in basketball, which is a sport that is not that full contact.
Right. almost reminds me of that David Arquette stuff.
Right?
Just like, hey, I can't tell you not to.
Yep.
Maybe you shouldn't.
He learned a real lesson.
Yeah.
And the fact that he learned the lesson is why I feel a little more okay about that than if he had, like, fucking done that and, like, all right, I'm ready for the next one.
Yeah, man. Exploding rings. Let's go. Come on.
Yeah. Man. Get fucking Onita in here. Let's do this shit. Yeah.
It's a great story. There's part of me that's like, mm-hmm. Yeah, man, David Arquette should wrestle. Why the fuck not?
I still think he should wrestle normal matches if he really wants to. Yeah.
Nothing against it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But death matches are a different thing, man.
It's just don't need, you know.
Weirdly enough, the mortality rate on deathmatch wrestlers is way lower than it is, like, most regular wrestlers.
Well, it's because they fuck themselves up in a way that ends their career earlier, before they get...
Not necessarily. There's some of those guys have gone a long fucking time. Like, Onita still was doing wild shit.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
In his 60s, like, fucking Mr. Pogo. He died recently, but, you know, he was an old man when he died. Like, Hayabusa is the only guy I can think of off the top of my head that, like... sustained, like, a career-ending injury. But that wasn't even during a death match. He just fucking did a flip and landed wrong.
Yeah.
And got that fucking neck injury. You know, Mick Foley's still kicking around. Fucking Terry Funk's still alive, for God's sakes.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe working with that fucking shit, you learn to respect it.
Yeah.
In a way that just makes you safer with everything else. Like, even if you're fucking going off the deep end into crazy shit, you're like, well... I've beat my body to shit enough to know that it can probably withstand this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, even the stuff I just see fucking... Like, the stuff they fucking have Shane McMahon doing. Which is not deathmatch shit. It's not fucking...
No, but it's still very stunty in a way that, like most wrestlers won't do.
Go like, come on, man.
Like, what? I feel like he's proven himself. There's nothing left for him to prove.
But also, like, that is his character. Like, if he's going to get in the ring and do stuff, it's that.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, otherwise, he's just going to throw those punches, and you're like, these don't look great. And that's not a match anyone wants to see.
Right.
But...
I would argue that there's really no version of the Shane McMahon match that anyone wants to see anymore.
Sure.
The bit, like, has been done.
But yeah, there are people that are still fucking into just, like, seeing him do the fucking dumb thing.
Yeah.
Once a year or whatever, that I think made a lot more sense back then, that now that doing it again is like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Same deal. It's like, come on. You don't...
I heard he's the greatest wrestler in the world.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think he won a tournament that said as much.
Okay. Like, it almost seems like a different side of the David Arquette thing of, like, he is the boss's son, and maybe there's this drive to prove himself and be one of the boys.
Yeah. But again, I think that was proven a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And continuing to do it just feels like him trying to take victory laps around a thing he really doesn't need to. Like, him trying to, like, say, like, no, I can still hang. And it's like, okay, it's
like, yeah, like, I guess,
sure you can, but, like, does anyone need that?
Right. And if we do need that, is that a fucking sad statement on the current... roster and storylines and everything else. You know, I'm just like, hey, yeah, you're going back to the well on this stuff, huh?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get it. I like the nostalgia acts here and there, too, but...
But not this. If you're not going to bring back the mainstream posse, what are you even doing?
Right, yeah. Can't bring Pete Gas out, then what are we doing?
I don't know.
is going to save us from ourselves. No more combat sports. Virtual combat sports. Robot yep. jocks.
Well, fucking A. I'm on board. Yeah, the problem with trying to supplant sports with esports is that there's a lot more racism in esports. I mean, there's
Are
racism.
You sure, it's not an equal amount.
There's a lot of racism in regular sports too. I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but I feel like that is the problem that needs to be tackled right now. With that, you know, yeah, players aren't dying on a regular basis, so at least there's that. But
they're also wholly unappealing.
Yep, for different reasons. Yes, the racism in regular sports is a lot more coded and fucking entrenched in years and years of fucking built-up subtlety that
yeah.
cannot disguise itself, whereas esports is just occasionally people saying the N-word when they feel like it, among other
yeah,
slurs.
Sure. Yeah.
Most of the overt racism in regular sports comes from the fans.
Yep.
But I mean, you lived in Boston, so.
I did. I definitely heard a couple of white guys with real fucking thick accents blurt out the N-word like it was the most common thing in their speech.
And it probably was.
Yep.
Going out to some bars on like a Friday night and just seeing, it was like closing time, so the last call, and just like seeing all the people spill out onto the street
mm-hmm.
and just witnessing it, of just like all the townies or what, the yah boys?
Is yah that, dudes.
Yah dudes.
The white hats.
Yeah. Seeing all those fuckers just interacting in like fucking desperate hookup mode, last call mm-hmm. type shit, and just going like, oh my god. Like, I feel like I want to call the cops for about 9 different reasons right
yep.
now.
Yeah, the concentration of colleges in and around the Boston area really sets the stage for some spectacular shitbags. It's a, yeah, it's a thing. I liked Boston living there. I don't feel any struggle
to live there yet. The first few times I visited Boston, I like kind of fell in love with it in a way. It was partially because of everyone who lived there.
Yes.
Like when everyone was at Harmonix and just everyone.
A lot of those people have since
left. Yeah, exactly, exactly. So there was definitely a part of it like, man, this seems just like, it's like the comedy scene seems really fun and all this other stuff. Like, this is cool. I should live in Boston.
Now.
season of Mystery Science Theater features Tretch from Naughty by Nature.
I heard.
It is a very blatant ripoff of Pacific Rim.
Ooh.
And it's a real piece of shit. So much so that I actually felt bad for Tretch from Naughty by Nature.
Well, he'll always have OPP.
It's true.
Yoke the Joker. I still have not watched any of the rebooted Mystery Science Theater.
It's good. It's a little different. But I've enjoyed the vast majority of the episodes. Last season it felt like they were going on longer riffs that were almost more commentary. This year it kind of feels like they scaled that back a little bit to more just like, you know, kind of snappy jokes.
Jokes.
Once you kind of get over the robot voices being different and fucking Patton Oswalt being there, it's like, it's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah. Well, if I was going to get over the robot voices being different, I would have watched more of the back half of that series the first time around.
Right. So. I think I started watching it late enough that the servo voice, right? That originally changed? Or was it Crow?
Well, the servo voice changed, like, after, like, season one or something
right.
like that. And they kind of settled into what it was for a while, and then I think it was the Crow voice that changed.
Yeah.
First.
But, like, those changes didn't really bother me that much, because I wasn't, like, used to one way or another.
Yeah.
Like, I started watching... Not right at, but a little bit before the Joel Mike changeover.
Okay, yeah.
Like that season, but I think it was like the beginning of that season. I don't know, so like that stuff never really bothered me. And here it's like, it's a little jarring just because I did eventually get so used to those variants of the voices, yeah. But like I think they do fine.
I just kind of never really liked the out-of-movie segments with the scientists and stuff after Dr. Forrester and Frank were gone.
Some of the Pearl stuff is really good. A lot of it is not.
I bet some of it is like, funny and fine or whatever.
Yeah.
The bald dude. And the,
I liked Bill Corbett as Brain Guy.
Yeah. I like Mike fine. I always liked Mike. It was just like the show was different enough that it just, with all the other stuff around him, it just kind of was never the same. Yeah, like I remember stumbling onto that show like around the beginning of season 3, just one random Saturday, catching it and being like, holy fucking shit, man.
Yeah.
And just immediately becoming obsessed with it.
I think I had run into it a little bit before one of their Turkey Day marathons.
Yeah.
Like, maybe the month before, and then coming upon realizing, oh, they're doing it all day. Oh, fuck, all right, this is a great way for me to fucking catch up on all the shit I missed. Yeah. And I think I spent maybe 5 minutes of that Thanksgiving actually spending time with family, and the rest of the time holed up in my room watching TV.
So, like, by the time they started doing the Thanksgiving marathons, like, I think I had already recorded all of those episodes.
Right.
I just had tapes and tapes and tapes. Like, I was taping over everything else I had ever taped as a kid.
Right.
Because I just didn't have enough tapes to store all these fucking episodes.
Well, and they've still never really put out, like, a definitive collection of all that shit.
Yeah, you know? I think they kind of couldn't.
They put out a million of those, like, 4-movie DVDs, right. And you kind of had to pick and choose based on that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that stuff's out there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know it exists. It's just, it's... hard to come by, like, good official collections of that stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Well,
was always really weird seeing the early episodes of it before Frank was there.
Right. When it was that weird guy with the glasses?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that the most successful cable access show of all time? Or was it cable access? No,
it was just a local Minnesota network.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Those episodes are interesting.
Yeah. Because they were very clearly just trying whatever.
Yeah. And also, like, they did some of the, like, some of the movies they did in that run, they did again later. And, like, watching where they're, like, clearly, like, okay, here are the four jokes that worked last time we did it.
Right.
And we're going to rewrite everything else. Because we've gotten a lot better at this.
Yeah. Yeah, those episodes are a little hard to watch, but they are fascinating in their own right.
Yeah.
I rewatched the movie not that long ago. Here's the thing. I was not overly fond of the movie when it came out.
Yeah.
And it doesn't wholly work. But if you just kind of insert it in there as, like, a slightly too produced episode of the show...
Totally, yeah.
It's still really solid.
Right. I think that was my issue with it, is sitting down watching it, like, oh, this is, like, just an episode of the show, and, like, not one of my favorite episodes of the show.
Yeah. And like, a good movie pick, but just not... It doesn't all feel right.
And then the stuff they did around it, you know, the slightly better production values of it being the movie, like,
right.
I don't think benefited it. So it's like, it's interesting, but not...
That and Brain Candy came out pretty close to each other,
totally.
Didn't they?
Like, those two they must have, because they are just, like, intertwined in my head. Maybe it's just because they're both TV shows that turned into movies with...
And also things I spent a lot of time watching on Comedy Central.
Right, yeah, yeah. I mean, I like Brain Candy a lot. I haven't watched it in a long time, but...
It holds up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched it, like, last year.
Did you ever see Death Comes to Town?
No, so I watched the first bit of that, and I was a little put off by it, so I don't think I ever went back to watch the rest of it.
I bought it on DVD at some point last year, intending to watch it, and just never did.
Like,
I
yeah.
I used copy for, like, $3. I was like, cool, I want to see what the fuck this thing is, and like, then just
it,
never...
It just wasn't doing it for me out of the gate, and then I just kind of never went back.
Yeah. I feel like most of, like, some of the later Kids in the Hall episodes where they just got into just like, okay, this is kind of a full episode bit.
Right.
Like, that stuff almost never paid off for me. Or it was never, like, my favorite shit that they've
right.
done. So, like, the idea of them stretching, like Death Comes to Town, like, as a, like, long thing for them to be like, eh.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, Brain Candy works.
Yeah, Brain Candy totally works. I like that movie. I know people have a lot of very justifiable issues with that movie, but I love it.
I don't know. In a way, I think it's one of my favorite movies about depression.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it doesn't treat the concept frivolously, and, you know, it kind of digs into the realities of, like, fucking for-profit pharmaceuticals in a way that maybe, like, a sketch comedy movie wouldn't necessarily, you would think it would.
Right. And did it, like... pretty early on.
Yeah.
In the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's generally very funny. So I feel like they did a lot more with that than I would have ever thought they would.
Yeah. That was another one where there was always talk of some insane different cut of that movie.
Yes.
That I don't know if that ever got...
Well, and I guess the shooting scripts at one point was very different, too, because, like, Dave Foley was much more... injected into that story before they realized he was not going to be able to be on set as much.
Yeah.
So they had to rewrite a bunch of that stuff. Hmm. But it's not like the Run, Ronnie, Run situation where I think they, like, hated, you know, the direction
anything. Yeah.
Now, that's a bad movie.
Yes. Okay, yeah. I like it, but yes.
I like Mr. Show. Run, Ronnie, Run is terrible.
Yeah. Yes, I like it, but you're also right. It is definitely stretching a sketch they did for that show out into full length in a way that it was never maybe meant to be.
Yeah.
But, you know...
They went for it.
Yeah. Also, I guess I have not seen that movie in at least 10 years, 15 years, I don't know.
Yeah. I feel like it would be a very hard one to go back to.
When was the last time you actually went back and watched, like, Mr. Show? Like, not maybe not straight through, but, like, watched full episodes of it instead of just, like, individual clips off of YouTube or something?
I haven't watched, like, a lot of episodes, but there have been a few that I've gone back to. Like, the one that had, like, the story of Everest in it, I watched one not that long ago. I watched the fucking, the one with the summer camp rap battle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, those shows are uneven. Like, there's definitely like, filler in all of them, but, like, the highs are still very high.
Yeah. It's weird, because, like, I don't, like, when that show was initially coming out, and I was obsessively watching it every week, none of it seemed uneven.
Right.
It was always like, this is the fucking most killer thing that has ever been fucking created. Holy shit.
And at the time, but it was fucking wild.
No, absolutely. Yeah. But, like, going back to it now, you're like, man, like, this stuff is a little uneven, and also some of it does not age very well.
No.
But it also, like, captures such a specific, like, time.
It is probably the best representation of, like, 90s alt comedy that existed on television at that stage.
And, like, the things you can look at and go, like, oh, this person's in it, this person's in it, and, like, think about all the stuff that they did around the edges of that scene or whatever. Like, that stuff's cool.
And then you go and you realize fucking Tom Kenny is, like, one of the richest voice actors in the world, right? Now, and fucking Karen Kilgariff has, like, this extremely successful murder podcast.
And is from Petaluma, weirdly enough. Like,
it's super weird.
I like Girls Guitar Club.
Yeah. Yeah, that shit was all right.
It's been on a long time.
He got points on all the albums.
Okay, yeah.
Like, I remember when we did SpongeBob tracks in the game, he had to sign off on all the contracts. Wow. Which he did, but it was just it was funny realizing that, like, oh yeah, no, like, he has this insane level of influence over this stuff.
There was the, like, just the live show, like, DVD thing, and then there was, like, the 6-episode Comedy Central series, or, like, it was a short series that was, like, reality show behind the scenes, like, similar idea.
Yeah.
Following them around. Like, that series, I think, is just maybe gone.
Right. Like, it's somewhere in a fucking Viacom type library, but no one knows where or has any gumption to do anything with it. Yeah, that...
Like, I don't think it ever got issued on DVD or anything like that.
Yeah, I had completely forgotten about that thing, actually, until you just mentioned it.
Really funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember liking it, but I also don't really remember much about it, because I don't think I've seen it since it first aired.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not, like, on YouTube or anything?
I don't... I only kind of give cursory glances around, but it just seemed, like, gone.
Right.
Or, like, never issued in any kind of lasting format, and so... Yeah, maybe someone fucking ripped it off of TiVo at some point.
Right. Great news, Jeff. Free Jack is now on Blu-ray.
Cool. Free Jack seems like a movie I would have seen, but I fucking... The only things I can remember about it are so superficial that I can't tell you if I actually saw it or not.
Let me put a couple of visuals in your head and see if any of this clicks for you.
Okay.
Mick Jagger driving a tank.
Not really ringing a bell.
Okay. Rene Russo screaming at a car accident.
No.
Emilio Estevez and Anthony Hopkins having a fucking intense sci-fi stare down against a green screen where fucking Emilio Estevez is... They're clearly looping the same scream sound effect multiple times.
Ooh. No, I...
All right, that's all I got.
Yeah.
Maybe. That's kind of what that movie has.
Maybe I didn't see Free Jack.
It's not a good movie, but I like it. It's one of those.
Mm-hmm.
It is a movie that I will not even bother to defend because it's not particularly defensible, but I like it.
It just seems like a movie, like it was coming out in that era when I was seeing damn near every movie that was coming out because...
It's like 94, I could just
I could get into all those movies for free. And it just seems like something that I would have shown up to some midnight employee-only screening of.
Right.
Actually, if it came out in 94, maybe that was before everybody worked at the theater.
That would have been just before.
Yeah. Maybe that's why.
Yeah, it was kind of in that range of Emilio Estevez movies where he was in a lot, but, you know, it was like fucking Men at Work and Judgment Night kind of all circling around that time. Folks, that's gonna do it.
Yeah,
we'll be back later.